Is there enough competition for ticketing and shows? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. First, there's news just now that under pressure from higher interest rates, factories are quieting down further. S&P's survey of people who do ordering at factories finds that in this month of January, things were still in contraction territory. Scott Wren is senior global market strategist at Wells Fargo Investment Institute.
Below 50 is contraction, and typically the U.S., especially for manufacturing, readings in the low 40s basically always result in a recession. So I think we're going to continue to see an economy that's slowing and weakening and eventually will hit recession.
I mean, it's the irony here, right? You don't want to see this if you work at one of those factories, but our central bankers are engineering just this kind of outcome.
Well, our central bankers, they will not say that they want the unemployment rate higher. They're going to be more diplomatic than that, but they want the unemployment rate higher, less money to go out and spend. And of course, what they're trying to do by raising interest rates is reduce demand. So they want all of us out there spending less money, and that'll take the edge off inflation, at least in theory.
The CEO of Live Nation Entertainment is set to testify starting in just a few minutes before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Live Nation, which arranges shows, merged with Ticketmaster more than a decade ago, a combination some argue has gotten too big. There was the mess last year with Live Nation's Taylor Swift tickets, which the company today is set to blame in part on a cyber attack. Marketplace's Matt Levin has more.
There's an old expression antitrust lawyers have for how hard it is to unwind a merger.
It's called, quote, unscrambling the eggs. Once the eggs have been scrambled, it's tough.
Michael Carrier is a professor at Rutgers Law School. The Department of Justice approved the Live Nation Ticketmaster merger in 2010. Critics like Carrier were concerned not only about higher ticket fees, but about a vertically integrated monopoly. Live Nation repped musicians, and Ticketmaster had the tickets, which meant Live Nation could threaten competing venues.
Hey, venue, you want access to our artists? You have to use our tickets. Or you want access to our ticketing? You have to use our artists.
A DOJ investigation in 2019 found Live Nation was doing just that. Live Nation denied the findings. Another DOJ investigation is reportedly underway. Diana Moss at the American Antitrust Institute says a decision to break up the company could lead to even more egg unscrambling in other industries.
You know, it's not like we're short on monopolies or oligopolies in the United States.
Live Nation declined to be interviewed for this story. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
There's Apple Pay, Google Pay, PayPal, and more. You can even wave your phone to get onto the subway here. Now, seven major banks. Wells Fargo, JPMorgan Chase, Capital One, among others, want a piece of that revenue and our data that goes with it, Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports.
A generation or two ago, if you went to buy something, you reached for your checkbook, which had your bank's name on it. But now, in an age of Apple Pay and Venmo, banks are feeling left out.
Your bank wants to be the first thing you think of when you think of any financial transaction.
Aaron Press is with the market research firm IDC. He says that's one reason why several big banks are creating a new digital wallet. They also want more information about what people are buying, not just where and how much. Bill Maurer studies payments at the University of California, Irvine.
Maybe they're using analytics to say, oh, he bought this, and then he went to that website, and then he bought this other thing. Sounds like he's thinking about buying a new car and then push me an auto loan.
Banks have tried to create digital wallets before without much success, partly because Apple Pay, Google Pay, and PayPal were all there first. I'm Stephanie Hughes from Marketplace.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
Each month, we watch a documentary film for Econ Extra Credit. Even if you don't watch, follow along free by signing up at marketplace.org/newsletters. For January here, it's the bodybuilding classic Pumping Iron with young Arnold, the Arnold who later ran California. While revelations years later showed a lot of the rivalry depicted was pumped up for the camera, and no one in Pumping Iron ever mentioned steroids that turned out to be shaping muscles, the film did drive a bodybuilding craze. Now, these days, you don't need a film to promote ripped bodies. Algorithms can drive it right onto your screens, but when does inspiration turn to harm? Joining us is Stephen Mayville. He's a psychologist who's treated dysmorphias, including muscle dysmorphia. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
I don't know. Some people of a certain age remember the ads of muscle men, sometimes muscle women in magazines, and maybe one of these bodybuilder events may have caught some people's attention, but now it's really everywhere. Would you say it's more ubiquitous?
Oh, absolutely. In the day of the age of social media, just everybody can join, everybody can participate. So you start to view things and, you know, algorithms get used to your preferences and you can be bombarded by that as much as you want, or maybe in some cases don't want.
Would you say there's a mismatch between what people say they're doing and what they're actually doing? Maybe someone's using anabolic steroids, but they keep it hush hush.
Absolutely. And when you see some studies where it can be upwards of 60% with competitive bodybuilders, that's also just looking at self-report. You know, so there are a lot of contingencies behind denying that and showing that you're someone who can, you know, overcome the typical limits of the human body through your hard work and, you know, achieve great things. So there's a lot that's riding on perpetuating that myth that these extreme physiques that you see are completely natural.
I mean, maybe you're not even a bodybuilder at all, but what photos of yourself do you put up and share with your friends? It's where you look good, where the light is just right. And, you know, day in, day out, that's not how we look.
Right, absolutely. When you look at it on a bigger level with this fitspiration stuff, you know, you're trying to do something that others might consider extraordinary. And the more attention you get, not only from people liking and following you, but the more money you can actually potentially make in doing that. So yeah, I think you're right. It is very pervasive from an individual level of trying to do what we can to put our best foot forward to a much broader level that sort of encourages this idea that we need to be a certain way to be all right.
What do you tell your clients about navigating this world where the images come at you from all directions that could influence how you think about your own body?
I think it's, certainly describing what's going on and letting them know that if it appears too good to be true, it probably is. I think it's important to let people know that you don't have to engage in self-loathing to motivate behavior to be healthy. A focus on health is what's important, and de-emphasizing the importance of obtaining a specific look for life outcomes. A lot of times there's a lot of myths tied to that, that if I just change something, my life is somehow going to be better, when that really, really isn't the case in most occasions.
Psychologist Stephen Mayville is based in Reno, Nevada. Dr. Mayville, thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Now, one place for help if you're worried about someone with body image issues is the Eating Disorders Hotline. Search National Eating Disorders Association, and the phone and text hotline numbers come right up. Our producers are Katie Barnfield, James Graham, Ariana Rosas, Alex Schroeder, and Erica Soderstrom. Our senior producer is Meredith Gerritsen-Morby. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. Here from APM, American Public Media.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Jerez, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.